We're here at Fringe City, sitting in Pavilion Gardens Cafe, and a very menacing man is about to join us, because this is a show called The Merchant of New York, and I'm joined by Nathan Ayres. Nathan, tell us Hi. About The Merchant of New York.
In less than 300 words, it's based on The Merchant of Venice, and it's a modern retelling in iambic pentameter, using modern-day speech, but then the script examines prejudice, prejudgment, and I subtly change the plot so that Shylock gets a chance to argue his case.
Do you think that you know, the New York bit too, you know, with everything that's going on in the world, is mm-hmm. very relevant right now?
I'm not sure of that, or where the question's going, Paul.
Well, I guess, you know, we're talking about... It's the end of the Obama age.
Oh, right.
There's a rise in anti-Semitism.
Rise in anti-intellectualism.
Yeah, there's yeah. been, you know, even stuff in the right-wing press again about the protocols of the Elders of Zion and the and all of that right-wing stuff that's out. Do you think that, you know, in a way, The Merchant of New York is a very timely piece?
I think certainly it's being re-examined quite intensely about the role of the outsider and how we treat people with our instant assumptions. And that's particularly borne out for Muslims more than anyone else at the moment, I suppose. But I'll think about that one. Thanks, Paul.
Pensive looks transfer very well onto audio. In terms of then working with the source material and then yeah. and rewriting it, modernising it, tell us about that creative process.
It's a very stupid thing to do. Don't do it. I spent about 4 months failing, but eventually found a way of writing in iambic pentameter using modern-day speech that could work, but it's so impossible. And of course, what a ridiculously presumptuous thing to do to alter Shakespeare, perhaps, or to use certain of those tropes and to put them to your own use.
You know, there are precedents. People like Berkhoff have taken the verse play, and you know, even, there's an East on in the Fringe now where, you know, the reviews are saying it's as relevant as it ever was.
I believe this one will be as well.
Yeah. But can we just get a little bit Frankenstein-like into your brain about what did you do? So you had did you lay this stuff out in front of you? Did you take the original words and reframe them? Did you just close your eyes and it came from somewhere? Let's just have a bit of a creative revelation, please.
It was a few of those. I will answer them point by point, which I can't do. But yes, I took the original text. I've made it more of a comedy. It's essentially a problem play, and I've given two solutions, I suppose, within the text. Those I won't be giving away. But it's all within Shylock arguing his case and finding various faults within the logic that is presented. Portia, of course, speaks marvellously about mercy, without ever actually delivering it at the very point. And it's not even justice. Essentially, it's a mistrial. And I thought it's a perfect vehicle to actually re-examine what mercy, compassion means in a real sense. We can all talk about it, but it's in the doing of it. It's actually showing when you do have the upper hand, an ability to forgive. And there is a deep... truth for me within all of this, which is buried completely within the text.
You kind of, in an almost comedic way, suggested, you know, the impossible struggle to pull this off, but you have pulled it off, haven't you?
I think that's for the audience to decide, but I feel good about that. It's won the playwriting competition at Rialto Theatre, which was a fantastic opportunity.
And then, but I even mean there's a script.
There is a script. Yeah. Yes. Oh, my God, is there? I thought I was... I was just making it up. But, no, it's very detailed. And it moves into another phase in the play. I love to examine things and pull it apart, but I'm being very, very careful with this one. because I'm hoping that it'll be a cause of a lot of re-examination, number one, of the play, but also in what actors do with parts, and it's about writing itself. How much does a writer get involved in the text and put forward their own subconscious prejudices or things within it? People believe that Shakespeare's talking about that, but he's supreme at whoever she was, being able to have different characters talk in their own voices. And that is, as a chameleon-y sort of actor, that's what I try to do. So I saw a number of parallels, and of course in writing it, well, I can call myself a writer, I suspect, but I'm just an actor with a script, asking audiences to love it.
How in the rehearsal room, how did the actor get on with the writer?
The actor wants a director, because I'm directing it as well.
So how did those three get on? Are they still friends?
Yes, they have differences of opinion. But the actor wants a director at this stage. About a week to go, they're all actually really happy with it, because I do have... Everybody says it, don't they? They go, oh, it's a great show, brilliant actors, and it really is. I'm surprised, although I cast it, but just how far they've come and got that and been supportive of what I'm trying to do.
And in the rehearsal room with the writer in there, has the writer gone away and rewritten?
Well, they've got one of the writers. I wouldn't presume. I do express that as well. I say to put the whole world in apostrophes and signs, to reduce our wide complexion to words on a page. Is an impossible thing, and how arrogant, how presumptuous of me to better a better man's verse.
So, did you rewrite it?
Did I rewrite my own stuff, or the Merchant of Venice?
Did the rehearsal process and seeing it done, did it make you go back to the script?
Oh, absolutely, but I've been doing that for about 12 years. It is evolving within rehearsals. The finished script is now just about to be delivered to us in a few hours. It has been through four stages. The actors have been absolutely brilliant in coping with the various upgrades. And, of course, there have been... after casting it, I was able to do what Shakespeare, I presume... Well, I think we know, was able to do within a real company as an actor writing for specific people. And I had a marvellous 72 hours where I was able to engineer the second half of the show entirely towards the gifts and the strengths of my actors, which I've never known an experience like that. That was good, but tiring.
Seth Morgan, lean forward.
Hello.
Is it refreshing or discombobulating to do kind of rehashed Shakespeare?
Ooh. Good question. It's
rehashed?
It's known as the problem play, isn't it? It's an uncomfortable experience very often to watch A Merchant of Venice. 3 hours nearly, spitting on someone, kicking him tearing his raiment. If you had to choose two characters who demonise the very idea of a foreigner, you'd probably have to go for Dracula and Shylock. Both big hits for Henry Irving. You know, with Shylock, he was one of the people responsible mainly for presenting a human interpretation. But he was the inspiration for Dracula, by all accounts, Bram Stoker's employer. So, there's good and bad in everyone. Shylock has been getting a very raw deal. I mean, forgive me if I'm repeating what you've already said, but Shylock's been getting a very raw deal for 400 years, so we're trying to give him a bit of his dignity back, get him a bit of justice. He's just lost his daughter, for God's sake, you know. So, yes, this is a very particular... It's an incredible scene, and we're presenting one... We want to keep some mystery. We're not going to tell you everything you're going to get for the Merchant of New York, because there's some fabulous surprises waiting in store. Also, I'd like to say with this production, this is the winner of a competition which was, what, 70 entrants or something?
It was over 100, but...
The writer's gone all modest now.
Over 100 plays it's were part of this competition. This is the winner, you know, so this is what the people want, perhaps a little more than most of the shows in the festival, you know.
But you've done a fair bit of Shakespeare in your time. Yeah, your beard's longer than mine, and that's even more grey. I'm just kind of interested in how it feels to be doing, you know, iambic pentameter through the character of a, you know, iconic Shakespeare character, but it's actually the words of a modern author.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's like one of the big reasons Shakespeare's still performed today is that this verse structure came into fashion, which aped modern speech, and just as it aped modern speech 400 odd years ago, it apes modern speech today. We still generally say, you know, and if you come away from the Merchant of New York thinking, what? It won't be Nathan's text, it'll be Shakespeare's. The text in Nathan's play is very impressive. It sounds like people talking, which is exactly why blank verse was such a hit in Shakespeare's day. And of course we're not the only ones, you know, people like Burkhoff and Mamet also try out blank verse every now and then. And it's a very important moment, Shylock's moment, and it's worth putting under the magnifying glass and seeing what other possibilities are within that moment.
I was also asking Nathan the question about the modern relevance of the play, because lots of young people are being schooled in vengeance, aren't they, these days?
Interesting. What are you thinking about that, about the extremist philosophies?
Yeah, just generally what's in the media. I mean, we're being taught in a way that there's a very biblical view of capitalism, and that an eye for an eye is kind of all right these days, isn't it? And with the technology that's now available to us, I mean, Shylock's almost come into his time, hasn't he, in terms of the way that Shakespeare portrayed him.
Interesting. Capitalism has its claws into our culture so deeply that it's very worrying, isn't it? You know, what role models are our children going to have? I mean, the media is so clogged up with utterly crass and destructive stuff. It's very worrying. Shylock's moment? I don't know. I'll have a think about that, if I may. I'll try and think quickly.
So while Seth's thinking about that, I'm kind of addressing myself to the vulnerable writer here. There's a week to go.
Yeah.
Now, what's going on for you in the run-up to a play?
New experience for me as writer and then director. I would like to be taking it as easy as an actor at this point, even though we always think it's terribly hard. But to cope with these simple logistics, we have a tech in a couple of hours and preparing the sound and the lighting, making sure everything is okay, meeting yourself and others and talking and keeping the ball rolling. Thankfully, and you hope at this stage, that a certain momentum is built and other people have corralled around it. You've managed to delegate well enough that the stress and all the deadlines which happen at exactly the same moment aren't overwhelming. And they're not at the moment. We're in a very good shape. So I'm extremely happy, and I don't quite know how that's been achieved at the moment. But a lot of focus, a lot of time, and a lot of love, I think. I would go on to the point you made previously. Howard Jacobson came down a couple of weeks ago for the Guardian Book Club. I went along to that with Sarah Williams, who's our Portia. And we sat there for 45 minutes, hearing at each turn for his great book, Shylock Is My Name, about a different interpretation of Shylock, and put into the modern tense, I suppose, and also re-examining another certain presumptions. The first of which, of course, is that Shylock is determined to go through with this. That is perhaps a cliche that has been played, and we now know that as fact. It's an assumption, and I look at Shylock's motives. but also when somebody does get to the point of where they have fought bitterly to make a point, what do they actually do? Shylock is not given the moment. Portia overrules. That is not justice. That is malfeasance. That is an abuse of power, of tyranny. And that's what I examine within this, the lovely phrase at the end that Graziano has, thou shalt have two godfathers, was a starting point to examine the other things that I introduce into the play, namely the godfather coming in the place of the duke, or in other words, a bent justice system. And that seems fairly apparent in the text that is given to us. Shakespeare, in writing many cases, does not tell us everything, and we interpret away and in our different ways. And I heard a wonderful one for the Avengers last week. They're doing the Shakespeare's kidnapped, is the Oberon thing. I love the idea. And then Marvel, Age of Avengers. Well, yes, there are different ways of doing it.
In playing Shylock modern, I mean, this Shylock's not running Wonga.com, is he?
He's not, sorry.
He's not running Wonga.com.
Well, we don't want to give too much away, but no, he's not. And you'll see more than one Shylock. I'll just say that and sort of leave that there, .. But back to your previous question, if it is the age of Shylock, then I'd like to believe that the Shylock it's the age of is the one who says, no, actually, I've had enough of this. Your racism isn't acceptable. And if you're going to put me into a corner, I am going to hold you to the letter of the law. You know. I love it. London's response to the Tories trying to place a viceroy grandee in charge. Saying, OK, right, well, we'll have a Muslim mayor then. There you go. That's what you get for that then. Everything to play for, ladies and gentlemen. Let's not settle for what we've got. And, yeah, if we have a play which is a snapshot of racism to many people, then I think in context we have to remember that before that, the Jew of Malta, and before that, the Jew as portrayed in medieval mystery plays. As harsh as Shylock's treatment in The Merchant of Venice may seem, it's a lot more compassionate, The Merchant of Venice, than what went before. So it's been a very long journey, and we're
with Dickens, I'd add.
We're the next leg. Yeah.
Can you add it on the microphone?
Yes, I thought I had. Yes, or Dickens' portrayal, obviously, of a money-grasping Jew.
So we haven't even mentioned Ron Moody yet, have we?
The brilliant, brilliant Ron Moody. And what about him? He is one of the spurs for the new Brighton Shakespeare Company. Mark Brailsford, who runs the Rialto Theatre, set that up. He played in Ron Moody's company years ago. I have nothing but respect for Ron Moody. But I think within Dickens' central portrayal of an archetype there, and as Seth says about medieval money-grasping Jew, because that's all a Jew was allowed to be, a moneylender, that we have certain prejudices inbuilt.
Now, as the interview is heading towards being about three times longer than the show,
not quite.
I did mention a menacing-looking man, and he's lurking on the edge, but I'm going to bring him in here, one of the cast as well. So can you tell us who you are?
I'm Steve Larkin. I'm playing Graziano and attendant.
So you are the goy.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a bookkeeper.
What's your experience of this piece?
This is my first time doing Shakespeare. I've known Nathan for quite some time now, and I really wanted to just try Shakespeare. It's a great team, and all the teams helped me to get more into the text and stuff. And it's been a real eye opener, and I want to do more of it. It's fantastic. And the direction and the whole team have been fantastic.
The director's good, isn't he?
The director's amazing. No, but it's been really, really good, and we've been rehearsing really intensely for quite some time now, and it's just putting more layers on it every time we do it, and we've still got a week to go, and it's just getting better, and we're really enjoying it.
So, in a way, though, you're the real villain, aren't you?
Without giving too much away, I'm a bit of a... Well, I'm an attendant. I'm making sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing, as you can probably tell.
You are the enforcer.
I am the enforcer, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Finally, I think I'm going to... I don't know why I'm going to ask Seth to do this, apart from the fact he does play Shylock, but I'd like to invite you to invite people who might be considering coming to see this. Merchant in New York, something Shakespearean. They haven't seen Shakespeare since school in any form. And so what would your invitation be to somebody that, you know, has got some money to spend and they may just book up for this one?
Sure. Well, I'd like to re-emphasise that this play was voted from around about 100 plays down to the winner of the Scratch Night competition at Rialto. Rialto wanted a brand new piece of theatre for this festival, and here it is. I'd also like to say that you'd possibly be hard-pushed for higher drama, because when Shakespeare wrote this great court scene, perhaps there weren't too many that have lasted this test of time. And we're putting this on after all of the great movie court scenes. And it's for people who love Shakespeare, come and see this. We're working with a lot of his rules. A lot of the reasons why it's still there today are underpinning this production, this piece of writing. Very high drama. There's a lot of comedy and satire involved as well. If you want to see a choice example of mansplaining, then you better come along. A lot of expectations will be flouted and subverted. I think if you love Shakespeare and you felt uncomfortable last time you watched The Merchant of Venice, come along. If you're not into Shakespeare yet and it's all around you and you're wondering why there are thousands of productions going on, that's another good reason to come and see the show.
Merchant of New York at Brighton Fringe. Thank you very much indeed. Three men with beards.
Thank you.